I'm Karen Given. Former University of Maryland head football coach DJ Durkin reportedly has a new job at Alabama. And that's where we're going to start this week on Three Stories You Should Know. I'm joined by Julie DeCaro, sports writer and host at Chicago's 670 The Score via Skype, and by Professor Kenneth Shropshire, CEO of Arizona State University's Global Sport Institute. Welcome back to both of you.
Hey, Karen.
Thanks, Karen.
Julie, please remind our listeners who DJ Durkin is and tell us what's going on with him now.
My pleasure. Well, when last we left DJ Durkin, he was being fired by the University of Maryland following the death of player Jordan McNair from heat stroke during a spring practice. An ensuing investigation found that players were regularly bullied, verbally and emotionally abused by coaches and the conditioning staff, including having players watch videos of serial killers at work and eyeballs being drilled into during team meetings. It would seem that DJ Durkin maybe should sit down in the corner and take a break from coaching for a while, but no, he's now been hired by Nick Saban as a consultant. You guys, this is just the latest in a long line of college coaches who leave a school due to a devastating scandal and then immediately get hired somewhere else. So there just seems to be no end in sight for the way that college coaches seem able to bounce back from deeds that would probably land other people in jail.
I'm fully with you. I want to say there is some good in college sport. There's a lot of good that comes for the young men and women that participate. But you're absolutely right. I'm shocked that DJ Durkin is resurrected so soon. But what happens in sport, and with this issue and with others, the desire, the need to win is so powerful that if somebody has a skill set, they get hired. Unless, as you point to, they're incarcerated. If you're available, there's still a chance that you will be hired by a team. And I'm not saying these guys should be incarcerated. You know, we can talk a lot about the kinds of violations that have taken place. You know, Ohio State, it was tattoos, or at North Carolina, it was grades. But this is actually a player dying.
Yeah.
While, and you know, I always look to the guy or the woman on the top. Durkin was the head coach at that moment. So, you know, if we want to know what's the most severe thing you can be engaged in, short of an actual crime, and still get hired again, Durkin has shown us what that is.
The desire to win does sort of start to override everything. But I mean, you get a coach like DJ Durkin. I mean, Maryland wasn't that great under him. I mean, they were like, what, six and seven?
Good point. Yeah. Very good point.
Yeah, my first thought was, you know, maybe this Durkin guy has a secret blackmail dossier on everyone in college football, and that's how he keeps getting hired. But then I realized that people in college football aren't in a position to hold Durkin accountable, because then they'd have to hold themselves accountable. I mean, do we really think that Maryland is the only place where disturbing videos are being shown to players, or where a member of the training staff threw a trash can filled with vomit at a player, and the report says, oh, don't worry, that only happened once? And we know that Maryland is not the only school where a player has died because no one was paying attention. So I think head coaches really do believe that it's their job to win, and it's someone else's job to take care of all this other stuff. And I think it's our job as fans, as journalists, as students, as players, to tell them that they're wrong in that estimation. And that's kind of what happened at Maryland, and maybe it should happen at Alabama too. What do you think, Julie?
The more that we hear from college football coaches and the way they sort of think about these things, the more appalled I think a lot of the fan base becomes. And, you know, I guess I'm glad on the one hand that fan bases do stand up and object and say this is not okay with us, but it's just exhausting.
Ken, it's your turn.
The big story this week for me is the National Football League revising the Rooney Rule. And this rule came about at a moment where there was a great deficit in the number of coaches of color in the National Football League. But the rule says, quite simply, initially, you must interview at least one minority, that's the word the rule uses, when you are hiring a new head coach. It was revised in 2009 to say, for any front office position, so general manager, president, like, you must interview at least one minority candidate. And the rule in general has had great success. Then last year, the Oakland Raiders end up hiring John Gruden. And essentially, by the analysis of many, they didn't interview anybody else. They did not comply with the Rooney Rule. They did bring in their tight end coach, Bobby Johnson, And they also had a form of an interview with the USC offensive coordinator, a guy named T. Martin. That kind of sham is not going to be allowed anymore. Any team that is going to interview for a new head coach must at least interview one candidate from what's called the Career Development Advisory Panel list. Most people refer to it as the list. And that would compel a team to interview somebody that's not currently on their team, not to just go to the locker room and grab the person of color and say, hey, let's sit down and talk about this job.
I think it's a good change. You know, obviously the Rooney Rule has become to, I think, in a lot, the eyes of a lot of teams, it's become sort of a technicality, like, oh, we got to comply with the Rooney Rule. I know there was a story in the Denver Post recently, maybe in the last year or so, talking about the fact that, you know, there are a lot of like linebacker coaches and stuff who are black men, but not necessarily in those coveted positions of coordinators, who are the guys who move up into the head coaching ranks typically. I don't know that much is going to change with the Rooney Rule until the NFL starts making it hit teams financially, right? I think only one team has ever been fined, and it was the Detroit Lions back in like 2003, and they got fined like $200,000 for not complying with the Rooney Rule, which they probably have in their couch cushions, right? When you have a league that is so prominently populated by African-American men, to then have white men making all these decisions. And I think that the Colin Kaepernick situation sort of played out, and you can see the complete and total lack of understanding by a lot of the people in positions of authority in the NFL, and that includes head coaches.
Yeah, I think we're all in complete agreement that the NFL really does need to focus on this issue. But, you know, I got to say, in a world where Bill Belichick has a job, I wonder if interview skills are really what head coaches are hired for. You know, it is almost impossible to get the head coaching job without being a coordinator first. So I wonder, like, why isn't there a rule that applies to coordinators? And you can't get the coordinator job without being an assistant first or being a position coach first. So why doesn't this rule also apply to those jobs? Ken, am I asking too much of the NFL here?
No, but you're talking to a monolith of an institution. As I said, it took 6 years to move from just head coach to include front office positions. So maybe things like that you're talking about are on the horizon.
Well, turning to the NBA, Josh Hart is a guard for the LA Lakers, and he's doing pretty well for a second-year player. He's averaging more than 9 points and 3 rebounds in 25 minutes per game. But there is one aspect of his game that is now the subject of a video breakdown, complete with appropriately dramatic music. Cue the music, please, Marquise. So Josh Hart is struggling to make contact with his teammates for in-game high fives. Yes, that's right. Hart has connected on just 28% of the high fives he has attempted. I love this story, and I love that people love this story. You know, I mean, who among us hasn't waved hello to someone who was waving hello to someone else, or gone in for the hug when the other person was going in for the handshake? And I kind of wonder, is this why we love this story so much? Ken, what do you think?
They got to be punking him. I mean, if we can still use that phrase. I mean, it really, you know. This guy is missing every high five. And it's not just, I mean, this is just worth looking at. It's not just that he's missing. People are ignoring him completely. And I'm just like, how does it happen? And not just once, but over and over again. So I just can't, is this for real? This is, you know, all this other stuff we were talking about earlier. This is really the burning question of the week. What's going on here?
Julie, what do you think?
As also a challenged high fiver, I can relate to this issue. I think it's a depth perception thing. I don't know. Like, I struggle with this as well, especially when people are taller than me. But, you know, the thing that this makes me think about is the fact that the NBA, when it comes to Twitter memes and social media and the enthusiasm of their fan base, I think is just unparalleled in sports. You know, I think a lot of this is the fact that the NBA has no restrictions on what fans can do with their on social media, right? They're not going to come after you for posting GIFs or for posting highlights because they don't want their fans to miss a second of what's happening. And so it leads to this kind of thing, which is fun for everyone involved. And then it leads to more people watching the NBA.
I think I have nothing left to say except, Marquise, can we play the music again? My guests for this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know have been Julie DeCaro, sports writer and host at Chicago's 670 The Score, and Professor Kenneth Shropshire, CEO of Arizona State University's Global Sport Institute. Thanks to both of you.
Thanks, Karen.
High five.